Good morning. Today is October 27th, and we are now actually, this is the second of our series, but it's really the first time where we're discussing a particular Shevet. The topic for the year is 12 tribes, one by one. That's what this looks like. Okay. All right. And today's tribe is, we're going to start with Reuven. I'm going to pass around some of these sources here. And we did last time a general discussion of the 12 tribes. And we will do all 12, but on some of them we will cover them two together. We're going to Yisachar and Zvulun together, and we're going to do Shimon and Levi together next time. Okay, so Reuven is perhaps one of the least represented tribes in stories later in Tanakh. I would say Reuven and Shimon together. All right, God pretty much falls in that category to some extent. All right, you have leaders from Naphtali, you have leaders from Yisachar and Zvulun, you have leaders from Dan. Right, of course you're going to have Yosef, Binyamin, and Yehuda. Okay, but Reuven is kimat not represented at all.
You're talking about the Torah or the Tanakh?
I'm saying later in Nach.
Oh, okay.
All right. So what we do is on the last page. See, the front says Reuven on it. On the last page, I have just a collection of a few psukim. And you have before you on the right side of this page. Is the it's sort of a rough drawing of the land of Israel as it looked like when we entered the land, right? You see, it's significantly bigger than it is today. Usually, when I make such a map, I like to draw what Israel today is. But you can see from the Kinneret, you can see it. It's a big chunk of practically all of Jordan, uh-huh. Right? But it doesn't go as far south, right, as it does today, right? You see that Shimon and Yehuda are pretty much the south of Israel. And I must point out to you that for most of our early history in Tanakh, practically the entire coastline, the population centers today, right, Tel Aviv, Haifa, Netanya, Herzliya, Ashdod, Ashkelon, the entire coastline we didn't inhabit. Mm. Right? The inhabited places in the time of Tanakh are the places where, either where it's Jordan today, or places where, in the middle of the heart of the country, where, the world tells us it's occupied territory. All right, so Lamaisa, though, you see that the tribes are really, there are a few things to notice here. Of course, that Menashe is on two sides, you see. Menashe pretty much, together with Yehuda, controls the largest area of land. Can you see that?
Yeah.
So why is Menashe cut in half? That's a topic for a later discussion. But insofar as he is together with Reuven, I'd like to just start with that for the moment. Okay, Reuven and Gad, we know, are on the right side of the Yarden as we're looking at the map, because they had a significant amount of cattle. So if you look at the second source on this page, it says Umiknei Rav Hayo Levin Livnei Reuven Ulivnei Gad Atzum Maod. Okay, so Reuven and Gad. Reuven is mentioned first because he's older. He's the Bechor, he usually comes first. And they had a tremendous amount of cattle. Right? V'yuras eretz yazer v'seretz gilad v'inei ha'makom mikom mikneh. The Mir'ed there was beautiful for cattle, and they decided that this was a good spot for them to which is the right side of the Kinneret, the right side of the Yarden. Okay. Now, the Yarden gets its name because the water is Yored Midon. Okay, I'm still giving you some general points. If you look at this map, though, you see Don is down by Yehuda. That's true. That's where they were at the time of Shimshon. That's why if you ever go near Beit Shemesh, there are all these places You see Shimshon's burial. You see the names of the places dealing with the Shevet Dan there, right? In fact, you have right near where Moshe lives is the Kever of Dan, which is amazing, right? I would tell you this that. Even if you go, if you were in yeshiva, they take you up north to all those the banyas. They tell you that it's done up there, isn't it? So in this map, though, you may remember in your Tanakh, especially the end of Shoftim, that Dan inherited the land last, right? They traveled last in the desert, and they didn't control the land on top there until much later than this map takes shape. And because they're the last to do all these things, there's a medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah that says that they will be the first tribe that will return from the 10 lost tribes. That'll be later in May and June. So when the black Jews of Ethiopia...
They say they're from Dan.
They always said they're from Dan, even back to the 11th, 12th centuries, when there were tshuvas written on them. You've heard maybe of the journeyman Eldad Hadoni. Did that ring a bell to you? All right. It was even the tours that today called the Eldad, the Dan tours, because of this historical element from years ago of this man named Eldad, the travels of Eldad Hadani.
Even in the end, though, when they conquered it, didn't they only take specific cities and not a
But it was in there, at that point, it was up north. Now, in this map, it's further down.
Territory.
I'm just mentioning this because if you wanted to know why it's called the Yardain and has to do with Dan, based on this map, you're going to say, where is it? Dan is down here by Yehuda. Okay, but that's just the point later. So, Menashe is on two sides of the Yardain. And what's a few things to note here. One is that Reuven and Gad both had a tremendous amount of mikneh. And then it says, Vayavau b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven, Vayimru al Moshe, v'alazar ha-kohen, on this area, etc., etc. Why did it switch the order?
Because God is probably a spokesperson.
So
Reuven doesn't stand up for himself.
What you see very early on already, let me sit here. What you see very early on already is that Reuven is second fiddle all around. Something about Reuven that God is a b'nei shivcha, right? God is the child of Zilpah, right? And he's stepping in front of the Bechor. Already in Moshe's time, the pasuk is giving, and not only that, later on, Vayomer Moshe. See, I underlined the pasuk book. Vayomer Moshe livnei Gad v'livnei Reuven. Okay, this is not done by accident. Okay, it means that the main instigators, the main speakers, the ones
is
who
a follower.
Right. So Reuven does not set the stage for anything. He's a follower. We'll see what that has to be for some issues later. Okay, some other Mephorshim say that this is because God had more mikneh than Reuven. Okay, but be it as it may, it's just maybe circular reasoning, but that's the way it is. Okay, so why is Menashe all of a sudden? I don't see Menashe mentioned here in Bamidbar Lamed Beis making this request. They only show up later. So there, I'm going to try to.
Because they loved Israel so much, right, that they can encourage them to do Aliyah
Regel. Right, so that's one Maimar Chazal that he dafka put. The tribe that loves Israel. You ever hear this? It's a Maimar Chazal that Yosef loved Israel more than the other tribes, and that Menashe was Israel was the favorite of Menashe. Good Shabbos. So why are you going outside of Israel? No, Moshe sent Chatzi Shevet Menashe to be on the other side, to hopefully make sure that the people who live there do not forget that Israel is your main center. Go Aliyah LeRegel. You still have to. Now the question I would ask you: what if Reuven and Gad had not asked for this land? What would have happened to it? I mean, we controlled it. It's like Israel after the Six-Day War. Right? How did we come to be in possession of this land? This land is not listed anywhere in Sefer Devarim as part of what our inheritance would be, what boundaries would be. Right? You familiar with that, right? So what would have, we came into possession of this land because Sihon and Og came out to fight against us. So here we are, we took it over. What do we do with it now? We call for, go to Khartoum after the Six-Day War, if anyone here is old enough to remember, in Khartoum, the Israel said, let's sit down at a table, let's try to normalize our relationship and make peace, and you'll recognize our existence, and we'll be very happy to relinquish this. And they said, no peace, no recognition, no talks. Famous three no's after the Six-Day War. So here, I don't know if they had wanted peace talks with Sihon and Og, but here we are, we're in control of this land. So the Netziv asks this question, and he says that had Reuven and Gad not asked for this land, all 12 tribes would have divided this area,
differently,
accordingly. The way Yehoshua divided the land in his sefer would have included these areas. As it stands, two of the tribes that asked for it got there, and then, sort of out of the blue, it just says that Moshe gave Reuven and Gad, and then all of a sudden, Chatzi Shev Menashe. And people ask, first of all, why only half? So he says, listen, they love Israel. I don't have to send all of them. Right? There's something that's not there. Did half of Menashe own cattle too? Something's not there. Now I have to tell you, because of Midrashim are not only information givers, they're also moralists. Says that Menashe was cut in half because of something that Menashe himself did. He was the one who was sent after
Binyamin?
After the brothers to accuse them of taking the cup. So because they said afterwards they ripped their clothes in two, so your land is ripped in two. It's a sort of a moralist kind of thing. Otherwise, you really at a loss. What Moshe just, out of nowhere, just gives Reuben and Gad what they asked for, and then adds just Chatzi Menashe out of nowhere. So the two questions are why Menashe and why half. So I just gave you these expressions. I would say a simpler pshat, Chevra, really simpler pshat, is that it says at the end of Amidbar that Shevet Menashe were the ones who fought most against Sihon and Og. It says so in Tanakh.
You're
Giladi. Right? Whether he's the same Yair Giladi as in Sefer Shoftim, as one of the Shoftim, that would make him very old, but Enechinami. The Shevet Menashe were the ones who distinguished themselves in the conquest of Sihon and Og, and therefore it's only fair that they should receive some of the land. Especially since the bracha that Yaakov gives, and this is a crucial way to learn Sefer Yehoshua, that the brachos that Yaakov gives in Parshas Vayechi, they're all realized in Sefer Yehoshua, in the distribution of this land, this picture. Yosef is blessed with Birchos Shadayim Varechem, the brachos of fertility, more than the other tribes. Remember, he's divided into two. If you add up Menashe and Ephraim, they're way out there. They're much more than the others. And then Yosef only has two sons. Binyamin has 10 sons. And Ephraim and Menashe is much more numerous than Binyamin. Right? So this is the... So if you look just at the land mass of Menashe and Ephraim, my goodness, it's more than five or six other tribes together.
Mm-hmm.
Yosef alone is more than half the land mass of everybody else. All right, but this doesn't matter for the land masses that Menashe and Ephraim control are not the choicest land in Israel. Choicest land Yaakov describes goes to Yehuda and possibly even Asher. Okay, Shmeinah, it's a very fat land. Okay, if you look at a map of America over the land mass, or even in New York State, the land mass covered by Republican districts is 90% of America. It's land mass, I'm saying. In other words, but the population centers where the majority of the people live are these small little pieces of the state. You know what I'm saying? So land mass doesn't mean anything in terms of if you just looking at the picture, you think that Menashe, that Yosef is most of the country. Now, to be sure, Yosef is also a Bechor. He's the Bechor of Rachel. Reuven is the Bechor of Leah. And so we'll see how that works its way through, especially in the first Pasuk on this page. Uvnei Reuven, you see at the top of the page, mm-hmm. This is Divrei Hayamim Aleph Perek Hey. The places of this pasuk, of these four psukim, I couldn't write it on the black,
yeah.
Is to the right there, you see it. Divrei Hayamim Aleph Perek Hey starts off. Uvnei Reuven, you all know what Divrei Hayamim is about, right? It's a chronicles of first 10 chapters of everything in Tanakh until Shaul's time. So it says, Uvnei Reuven, Bechor Yisrael, Kihu HaBechor. Okay, what are you telling me? In other words, I'm counting him first because he was the Bechor. He's mentioned first in the Midbar, he's mentioned first in the countings. So he's the Bechor, he goes first. However, Uvachalalo Yitzu'e Aviv, which is going to be the bulk of this presentation here, I'm going to turn back to some of these pages, when he violated his father's couch, doesn't say how he did that, but he did, Nitna Bechoraso Livnei Yosef Ben Yisrael. It's a passive verb. The firstborn right of Yisrael's children went to Yosef, as opposed to Reuven. In what form would you say this?
That Yosef gets double.
Right.
It's two. He gets two tribes. Right. The Bechor gets a double portion, and Yosef gets the Bechor of tribes. However, v'lo lihityaches lebechora. And that's a little cryptic.
Which
the yichus of the true Bechorah should be that he becomes king. But the king did not, this is now a sort of an indictment against Yosef. Why isn't Yosef king? Yaakov is sitting on his deathbed. It should be obvious which of these 12 children should be the king. Why does it go to Yehuda? It should go to Yosef. He is king. They're bowing down to him.
Because Yehuda can convince the others to do things and Yosef can't.
In order to answer this question, Rebbetzin has given many shurim over the years on this topic. In order to answer this question, what does Yehuda do to deserve the Bechorah more than Yosef? It also answers the question, what does any child of Yaakov do to deserve Bechorah more than Reuven? And this starts, I'd like to direct it to a number of cases in Sefer Bereishis. The first being the tragic death of Rachel. The background of the tragic death of Rachel is that Yaakov is in transit. He's traveling. What happened just before? Perhaps, the reason for the travel, which is the brothers killing off Shechem. He was living in peace there. You can't live here anymore. The Amori are going to trample me. I have to get out of here. All right? So Yaakov could be very angry with Shimon and Levi and blame Rachel's death on them. Right? She died in childbirth while traveling. That's how they got to Beis Lechem. So, she's in her ninth month, obviously. And I'm sure the travel did not go easy on her. So Yaakov is very upset about what happened in Shechem and could blame it on Rachel. Could blame Rachel's death on Shimon and Levi. So, and then what happens right after Rachel dies is beyond tragic. Right? So, for that, I would ask you to just look at a different part of this page and go to the beginning right after the opening page that says Reuven. You took to the bottom of this page. This is just in handwriting. You see it at the bottom. Vahi bishkon Yisrael be'eretz ahi. Okay, should look like this. Just take the page that says Reuven and just turn to the next page. Okay, vahi bishkon Yisrael be'eretz ahi. Vayelech Reuven vayishkav es Bilha pileges aviv vayishma Yisrael vayu bnei Yaakov shnei masar. So Chazal darshan this idea that we refer to the 12 sons of Yaakov right after this dastardly deed, that the deed is not as dastardly as it appears. I mean, vayishkav es bila is a pretty clear verb in Tanakh.
Yeah.
Right? I question if all he did was move a couch from one room to another, which is what my third grade teacher taught me. Why would the Tanakh malign him to the point of saying that we know what Vishkav means. What was his justification of such a thing? Right? And furthermore, you have some Mephoshim, like Bechor Shor and others, who say that he did what it says he did. right? Well, and so I'm asking those Rishonim, what do you think the Gemara is doing? You know, what gives you the right to explain the pshat the way it appears? I mean, there's a whole host of issues to deal with the text and with the Mefarshim. What did Reuven do? So this is how I would like to close today's presentation with an answer to that question. But first, let us search for some other things. It just says Vayishma Yisrael. Yaakov heard about it.
He doesn't react.
But doesn't react on the spot about it, right? He sort of lets it simmer, right? And then he does get his say about it in Perek Mem Tes. Reuven Bechori Ata. Kochiv Reshis Oni. You're my strength. You're the first of my strength. Yeser Se'es V'Yeser Oz. If there's time, I'll try to figure out, we'll try to work on what is Reshis Ono. Right? A Lashon that only appears here by Reuven. And then in Sefer Devarim, describing a man's obligation to give his firstborn son a double portion. Kihu Reshis Ono. Lo Mishvata B'chora. Right? We'll have to see what it means. All right, he says, Yeser Se'es V'Yeser Oz. You're always trying to show your strength and the upper hand, but it never works.
Hmm.
I know you, as if though Yaakov has the text of Bereshis in front of him. I know you meant to save Yosef. Right? I mean, this is just, I'm saying midrashically now. And I know you want to bring Binyamin home. How does he try to convince Yaakov that he'll bring Binyamin home? What does he say? Yeah, he says, Daddy, I'm so sure that I'm going to bring him home that you don't have to worry about losing a second son, that if he does die on this path, then you can kill two of my sons. You lose two, I lose two.
That'll make him happy, losing grandchildren too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'll console myself over losing a second son that I get to kill two grandchildren. No, but that's obviously not what Reuven means. He means I'm so sure that I'm going to bring him home. That this is you know, I'm putting my two sons up as a ransom, right? So Yaakov does not pay heed to that. What gives Yaakov the right to put Binyamin himself has 10 children by now? Wouldn't Binyamin come up and open a mouth and say, Daddy, I'll go. Let me go, Daddy. I'll be careful. Binyamin's no youngster at this point. He has 10 children. So I would like to justify Yaakov's behavior there, since it is tangential, is that, remember, his mother died while they were traveling. Yosef died while, as far as Yaakov understands, while traveling looking for his brothers. Travel is dangerous for this one, more than for the rest of you. You've all survived travel. Everyone in his family dies while traveling. I can't put him through that. Does that mean Yaakov was superstitious? No, there are halachas like this. Chazakas and Sechzivamas, all kinds of cases where this happens to a family twice and don't, you know. They understood. Two boys die while giving a bris. It must be, they didn't know what hemophilia was, but they understood that there were these things. Something's happened twice. Don't tempt the fates, right? So that's why, you know, Yaakov, you know, it needs convincing about whether to send Binyamin to get food. You all know what I'm talking about, right? Okay? So that's Reuven. Your pachas kamayim. You have good intentions, but you don't never follow through. Who's more convincing is Yehuda, who doesn't have to tell his father, you can kill two of my children, because what can he say? I've already lost two children, Daddy. I would never let you go through what I'm going through. In other words, Yehuda is better at empathizing with his father, not for something he's going to do, but for something I've already experienced. Right? Not that, does this mean to say that only someone who already lost two children is the only one who... No. Yehuda is follows through. When the Gemara asks, what did Yehuda do to deserve Malchus? They say what he did with Tamar. Okay, when he says "Tzad kami many," that means that you can now the king can come from you, because in Ben David Bali migeish kupa shel shrotzim unach mitzavro. You have to be David knows how to say chatasi. Shaul doesn't, because Shaul is so perfect. Yuma Chaf Beis says that Shaul was a much, much greater specimen of human morality than David admits. But that was his undoing. Because when you're so perfect, you're at Tzadik Harbe, you'll see. You'll see what happens. You judge more better than God, better than Shmuel, better, so that's your undoing. Okay? So Yehuda is this imperfect individual. He's not as perfect as Yosef as an individual either. But that's the characteristic we're looking for in a king. That is able to recognize quickly that and I say quickly because Pachas Kamayim means impetuous. Impetuous. I think Chazal give Reuven a pass on whatever he did with Bilha, because Chazal say, look, he had good intentions. What were intentions? I saw my mother Leah play second fiddle to Rachel. I will not allow her to play second fiddle to Bilha. Right? Yaakov's couch does appear to be with Bilha. So whether he, for a third grader, because you can't teach a third grader by Ishkavis Bilha. So for a third grader, you teach, what did he do? And you can see, I remember hearing it, and I say, wow, that's crazy. How could you do that? Go into your father's bedroom. You know, your parents' bedroom is the Kodesh Kodashim in your house. You shouldn't even walk in there. Right? So in some of the houses, I remember kids growing up, there was a bathroom in the parents' bedroom. They didn't even have to use the bathroom you use. That was crazy. In my house, I remember we lived in a place with one bathroom for all 14 of us. No. Anyway, but we had to share a bathroom with three neighbors. Anyway, but the point is that Reuven to go and step into his parents' bedroom and take out. Wow, how could he do such a thing? So that was like as crazy to us as what the Pasuk says, right? So when you get a little older, maybe the text can speak to you in a different way, you know. Right? I think that it's because that's how, you know, the B'chor Shor and others are reading it, maybe. All right, we'll see also, I have some two sources from the Apocrypha here about what Reuven does.
Does the word pachas appear elsewhere?
Pachas, yeah. Yeah, pochazim, verekim, yeah, all over Nevi'im Rishonim, yes. These are, but these usually call it unstable, right? Water is unstable because it just takes the shape of its kli, right? So Yehuda Reuven just he goes like this. Now let's see. Okay, the wind's blowing that the brothers will not listen to me if I put Yosef on my shoulders and take him home, right? The famous Medrash that if Reuven knew that the Pasuk told his intentions, then he would have taka done that. He didn't know he was getting credit, right? Remember the two other cases like that? If Aaron knew...
Boaz and Ruth.
Boaz, correct. Boaz is the third, Aaron is the second. If Aaron knew that the text would record how happy he was at seeing Moshe, he would have come with a band and a shmorg and food. And the other third one is if Boaz knew that the text would record how much food he gave Ruth, he would have given her more. Anyway, it's a medrash. So here it's that Reuven is pachas kamayim. He has good intentions. We love Reuven because he's the one with good intentions, but he just doesn't follow through. So he doesn't get the bechorah, right? And I don't want to get let the cat out of the bag of why. So why doesn't Yosef get? Yosef gets the bechorah. Why doesn't he get the malchus? I want to save that for when we do Yosef and Yehuda. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Moshe refers to Reuven, Yechi Reuven va'al Yamos v'hi misav mispar. It's just such a giveaway. That's all he says about Reuven, as if though Reuven, don't die on us. Right. By the time Moshe says this bracha, the only thing we ever hear from Reuven is that he joined Korach. Mm. Wow. That's going to be, I'm going to have to do that. With the fourth source on this page is what we just did with Divrei Hayamim. So I have two things left to do. We did Reuven ago, we did the top with Divrei Hayamim. I have two other things to do with Korach, but before that I want to do what's on this second and third page. What you see here are two sources from the Apocrypha. Are you familiar with the Apocrypha? This is Christians included in their Old Testament. The Apocrypha is known in Chazal as Sfarim Chitzoniim. The top is called the Testament of the 12 Tribes. I'm sorry, the top line is cut off. The second one is called the Book of Jubilees. Okay. Testament of the 12 Tribes is just an amazing source. It's really worthwhile to read through at the end of Bereishis. It is a separate book of the Apocrypha. Apocryphal means, well, did it really happen? All right, but that you can say that about certain Midrashim, too. Right? Did it really happen? It's that Paro's daughter's hand stretched out, you know, 10 amos. So things like that, where did water really rise out of a well and to rip this pail? The Testament of the 12 Tribes you'll find it in its entirety, if you want, in Ginsberg's Legends of the Jews, which now is available in just 2 volumes. One of our kids got it as a mitzvah present, at least. Yeah. It used to be in like 12, 13 volumes. The index is an excellent source for out-of-the-way Midrash. Now with the internet, I guess, everything is out there. But this is a work that's over 100 years old. And it was originally written in German. It was translated into English by Henrietta Zold. Are you familiar with that name? Mm-hmm. The entire Testament of the 12 Tribes can be found there. It goes in order from Adam straight through history to Esther. That's what this is. Goes through it, and when you get up to just keep going, Yaakov, Esau, Yosef, and when you get up to the end of Bereishis, you'll see the Testament to the 12 tribes. What is it? It's all 12 tribes on their deathbed telling their children, grandchildren, everyone who's around their deathbed, all died with all their descendants in front of them, telling them advice for life based on their experiences. Wouldn't you like to hear? What does God have to tell? What does Usher have to tell his children about on his deathbed? It's a fascinating medrash, right? Does it have the same strength as a Bereishis Rabbah? What can I say? When I quote the Apocrypha or anything from these sources, I always say there's a tradition within Judaism that I don't like to uplift them to Chazal. Look, it's Christians, it's biblical. You know what I'm saying? You know, one of the most famous books of the Apocrypha is how we know most of the Hanukkah story. It's called Sefer Chashmonaim, or some call it Sefer Maccabim. All right? There are a few of them. All right? Maybe you know the story of Yehudas. Judith is in the Apocrypha. Mm-hmm. Right? Tovia. There's some books that... But by far and away, the most famous book of the Apocrypha, because it's quoted quite often in the Gemara, is Ben Sira, Mishle Ben Sira. Mm. Right? And to the untrained ear, you will not be able to differentiate between Mishle ben Sira and Mishle ben David. Right? It's a book of Proverbs. Mm-hmm. Okay? From ancient times. Right? There's one Maimer Chazal that says that Ben Sira was Yirmiyahu's son. Fascinating. I don't want to tell you the whole medrash about it, but if you have a chance to look it up on the internet, to Google Ben Sirach, usually he's called Sirach, S-I-R-A-C-H, and Jeremiah, but I warn you in advance. Okay, so that's just the background on the it's called Sfarim Chitzoniim. When the Mishnah says Hakori b'Sfarim Chitzoniim Ein Lo Chelek L'Olam Haba, at the end of Sanhedrin. And the Gemara says, what are you talking about? You lose your Olam Haba for readings from... The Gemara quotes from Chitzoniim. There's one Tosfos in Erev and Daf Samachay that has a whole litany of quotations from Mishle ben Sira. So the Gemara says, no, you're allowed to read it. You're allowed to read Homer, but you can't consider it part of Tanakh. Right? What does it mean to read Mishle ben David as part of Tanakh and Mishle ben Sira not as part of Tanakh? Okay. Now, after saying all this, I would tell you that really these two sources are not part of the Apocrypha per se, but part of because some Christian Bibles do still include it, but something called the Pseudepigrapha. You familiar with that? Yeah? That's a Pseudepigrapha. All right, but you see the Apocrypha and Pseuda in both of these, which means that, okay, these are nice stories, but no one is going to sit down and attest to them. Okay, but anyway, this is the copy of the Testament of Reuben, which he gave as a command to his sons before he died in the 125th year of his life. All of their years are listed in this book, how long each one lived. Do you have it? There's a 15 at the bottom.
Yeah. Okay,
you're reading Jubilees. Okay, this appears in two different places. Okay, And there's another source that actually gives all their birthdays. Reuven's birthday is the 14th of Kislev.
Hmm.
Right. I should tell you for a moment what the significance. There is significance to that, because Chazal say that because Rachel kept silent and did not step forward to say, "Hey, I should be under that chuppah." She was probably tied up someplace, but she gave Leah her signals, as you may know from the Medrash. Because Rachel was silent, she was zocha to have Shaul as a descendant, where she was silent, where he was silent. He didn't tell his parents, his uncle, that he was crowned king. He just said, "We found the donkeys," or he asked about the donkeys that he was looking for. And because of Shaul's tznius and silence, he was zocha to have Esther as a descendant, who was also silent until it was strategic to inform Achashverosh of her lineage. So if Reuven was born on Yudalad Kislev, that means the wedding was Yudalad Adar. Just count back. There is one medrash that the tribes were born early, but let's just assume that all these dates given for the birthdays of the Shvatim are all significant. At least one I'm doing now is the one we're learning about. Reuven, that means that the wedding of Yaakov and what turned out to be Leah was Purim. And it set in motion a whole series of events that saved Klal Yisrael in Bada Chorban. If you read Yirmiyahu Lamed Aleph, which is Racham of Akal Banel, there's Rashi there that brings out how she saved Klal Yisrael with her arguments at the Chorban, and how she saved Klal Yisrael in she didn't know this at the time, she just did the right thing in her eyes, but that saved us twice. Okay, when he was ill, 2 years after the death of Joseph, so he outlived Yosef. Yosef was the first one to die at the age of 110. His sons and grandsons met together to visit him, and he said to them, "My children, I am dying and going the way of my fathers." And seeing there Judah and Gad and Asher, his brothers, he said to them, "Raise me up, my brothers, so that I can tell my brothers and my children what lies hidden in my heart, for I am about to die." He got up and kissed them and said, weeping, "Listen, my brothers, pay attention, my sons, to even your father and to the commands I give you. And behold, I call the God of heaven to witness against you today, so that you do not live your lives in the ignorance of youth and give yourselves up to fornication as I did, and defiled my father Jacob's bed. For I tell you, he struck me with a foul disease in my loins for 7 months, and had not my father Jacob prayed for me to the Lord, I would have died.
Ooh.
For the Lord was minded to destroy me, for I was 37 years old when I did this evil before the Lord, and for 7 months I was dangerously ill. And with determination I set myself for 7 years to repent before the Lord. I drank no wine, nor strong drink, nor meat entered my mouth, and I tasted no pleasant food at all, as I mourned over my sin, for it was great. May no such thing ever again happen in Israel."
Hmm.
Okay. Take a look at verse 13, though. It says, "For while our father Jacob was away on a visit to his father Isaac, when we were in Eder near the house of Ephrat," that is Beis Lechem, "Bilhah had been drinking, and she was lying asleep in her bedroom with nothing over her. And I went in and saw her nakedness and did the wicked deed, and I left her still asleep and went away. Immediately an angel of God told my father Jacob about my wickedness. He came and mourned over me. As for Bilhah, he had no further relations with her." What is this last point trying to answer? I know this is beyond Reuven for the second, but...
A woman sleeps with another man, she's no longer allowed to her husband.
Right, so the reader does have a question. It says, Vayishkaves Bilha. That's the typical way that this word appears. However, when it's against her will, the text will usually write something like Vayaneha or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it does with
Dina,
right? Okay, but this is a terrible disgrace, no matter what. But the question is, this is trying to answer, this is really actually saying something positive for Reuven, if we assume that he's telling the truth, that Bilhah was, it's also, you know, not so many commentaries to this book, but
she was a
married woman should not be drinking when her husband's not around.
Mm.
Right? But it's trying to say she was so drunk that she could not know that I was with her.
Like,
in other words, the text is trying to
lessen his transgression?
No, lessen her transgression.
Her transgression?
If she goes willingly, if she goes willingly, then come show him. Okay. You sure?
We're speaking.
Okay, very good. So, I think it's trying to undo whatever we might want to think about Bilhah. But it does say afterwards that one way or the other, Reuven got what he wanted.
His father couldn't be with his...
Which is that now my father must spend more time with my mother, because he's not going to favor Zilpah over my mother. Surely, I mean, if my mother played second fiddle to Leah, he's not... So she might play second fiddle to Leah... to Rachel, and then she's going to play second fiddle to Rachel's handmaid, but not to her own handmaid, right? The text does refer to her as a snua, ki snua hi, but that
she
just
really
means the relation to Rachel.
Was, yeah.
Right. There is a medrash that says that Yaakov wanted to divorce her the next morning.
But she said, wait to see if I'm pregnant.
If I'm carrying your child, don't make me raise that child alone. So he stayed with her and he built a nation with her, half a nation with her. Okay? But it is trying to possibly resolve the question the reader might have: did he do this to her, kicking and screaming? Did he mamish? He knew he would. No, she was
drunk.
Okay. All right. Now, the Apocrypha has no allegiance to biblical characters the way Chazal do. If you turn the page to where Shabbos Daf Nun Hey on page 17 here, okay, the Rav Shmuel ben Nachmeni Rabbi Yonasan, you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is part of a whole series. This is at the beginning of the series. It's Reuven, remember? B'nei Eli, B'nei Shmuel, David, Shlomo, Yoshiyahu, whole series of biblical characters where the same Mandomer, Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Amar Rabbi Yonasan, says that the sin that appears in this story is not what you think it is. Right? Now, the one by B'nai Eli, I think, is instructive here, because you all know what that story is, right? In front of the Ohel Moed, it says that the two sons of Eli slept with women. Front of the Ohel Moed? That's too crazy. How does that go on? That's like Zimri and the daughter of Cosby Bas Tzur, right? In front of the Ohel Moed? You can't be discreet and then just find a hotel or something? That's crazy. Right? So there the Gemara absolves them too. And it says, no, what they really did was they were lazy in bringing their kinim. When a woman gives birth, she goes to the Ohel Moed, she brings her birds, and they offer it, and then it goes back to her husband. Right? Uh-huh. But if the Kohanim are lazy and not bringing it in time, the women are stuck there. And the way the Malbim is ingenious, he says when it says they slept with the women, it was the husbands who came. Vishkav doesn't say B'nai Eli slept with them. It says the husbands came. They were missing their wives. They were gone for a week or two because they would have had a big backlog and they were busy partying when they should be bringing the women's korbanos. And that made a breach of tznius between the husbands and the wives, where they renewed their relationship with their wives in a way that wasn't tznius.
Hmm.
All right, but the Gemara, that's the Malbim. The Gemara just says that B'nai Eli didn't do such a terrible thing. Right? So it says, take a look, it says, Kol ha'omer Reuven chota eno ela toe, shnemar v'yu b'nei Yaakov shnemasar, malameid shekulon shkulim ke'achas. That all 12 were equal, and that Reuven still stands with all of them. I'll get to B'nei in a minute. Ela ma'ani mekayem v'yishkav es bilha, p'ilegesh aviv, malameid shebilbel matzao shel aviv, umalala kasuv ki'ilu shechavimo. Means that he moved the couch, and the pasuk treats it as if though, really, why would you malign someone so much to do that? Tanya, Rav Shimon Lazar Omer Mutzal Oso Tzadik Me Oso Avon Velo Boma Says Eliado, Efshara Sid Zara Lamod Al Har Eva Velo Mara Rush Ochevi Meishas Aviv Viavo Chet Zeliado. Ela mani mekayem veishkav esbila pilega shaviv, el boni motava. Amar ima chosi mi haisa tzara li mi, shivchas ha chosi mi tia tzara li mi. Amar ubilba es matzah. Okay, get it? I mean, I read it quickly because I just said this outside a few times already today. Right? So he says that but the Gemara adds one explanation. Is you know that later in Torah, also fulfilled in Yahushua, there were six tribes on one side, six tribes on the other side.
The blessings and the curses.
And then the blessings and the curses. There were 11 curses that are listed there. Right? One of the curses, where Reuven was on the side of the curses, right, was cursed is the man who sleeps with his father's wife.
Mm.
Well, how could you put Reuven on that side when that's just what he did? Well, it's Pilegish here. It doesn't say his wife. All right, but those Bilhah and Zilpah are called the She'aviv elsewhere. I understand Pilegish is trying to blunt the effect of how bad this is. But the Gemara just says it's like a tautology. Right? Yaakov wore a yarmulke. It says, Vayetzi Yaakov. Would Yaakov walk out without a yarmulke? Right? It says, cursed is the man who sleeps with his father's wife. Reuven must not have done that. Otherwise, why would God put him on that side saying that? Okay, actually, if I can take you to a Bavanel who asks, what are these 11 things? What are they? Ibn Ezra already said that they're things you tend to do in secret. You think you're getting away with. You're not getting away with it. Ibn Ezra, Bavanel, ingeniously, like he does in so many places like this, connects each one of these 11 to one of the tribes. Of course, this one is Reuven. And he shows ingeniously through Tanakh, not just what has happened so far, but what's going to happen, that each one of them, each one of these 11, and Shimon is left out because
he disappears.
Because he's not blessed he's not blessed in the Zos HaBracha, so he's not cursed here. And because he disappears. Achakem b'Yaakov, Afitzem b'Yisrael, if you look at the map, you see there's no line between Yud and Shimon. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
All the others have a line. It says in Yoshua, Perikates, Pasuk Aleph, that Shimon assimilated into Yehuda already. They didn't have their own land. Which would mean at the end, when we talk about the 10 lost tribes, it should really be 9 lost tribes. Shimon, Yehuda, and Binyamin, and of course Levi, are identifiable. The Jews are Shimon too. The Jews may be Yisachar and Zvulun too. But we'll talk about that, the 10 lost tribes. We'll see more about that.
Reuven did as much teshuvah as this apocryphal source says. Maybe that would be the best instruction of you shouldn't do this.
Of course. The whole thing is about the tshuva. We'll get to that.
So then people would make sense for it to stand on that mountain because it would be like a flat.
It's part of your tshuva. Okay.
The
Gemara thinks that this is like a tautology. This must mean that he didn't do what it says. So otherwise, he would never be on that part, that side of the mountain. This wouldn't have been included. But the Bravanel says, Adarabha, that's the very point. And you're explaining the Bravanel, of course. Right? What does this have to do with Bnei Eli? Because it seems from both of these that if someone prevents a man from being with his wife,
that's a great
the thing. Bible will liken that unto sleeping with her. Get it? Unto violating her. You hear it? Bnei Eli kept the women from going back to their husband. We're going to say Veishkav, Veishkavu, Esandoshim, Pesach, Amoi. Reuven keeps Bilhah from being with Yaakov because he wants Yaakov to be with Leah, so it's as if though he took Bilhah. Get it? So that's the first two. And the Gemara here says in Megillah, that's Shabbos Tefnin Hay. Megillah says, Maaser Reuven Nikra Belo Matargim. Wow. Huh. You know, at the time of the Gemara, they used to read Psukim one at a time, and then in Temani Shuls they still do it. And then they would read the Targum Onkelos right after. Pasuk Targum, Pasuk Targum, Pasuk Targum. Yeah. Some places they do two or three. Three psukim, three targum. Three psukim, three targum. So the Gemara says that when you get up to what Reuven did, don't targum that pasuk. I should give you the targum. The targum just reads it at Kipshuto. It doesn't say he moved the couch. It says, Veishkav is Bilhah in Aramaic. Right? That's Targum Onkelos. Targum Yonah's son. Targum Yushalmi. The Eretz Yisrael Targumim, which were mostly interpretive, not just translationary. But interpretive. Changed it to, what the Gemara says. So Rashi discusses everything we've said here, and the Bechor Shor I mentioned to you before, says at Gipshuto at the bottom. So what is it? What did Reuven do? So I think I've, you know, if you turn to the middle page, page 16, where the Jubilees is written here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't feel the need to read this now. I want to draw our conclusions now with the small time remaining. Is that this Medrash just reiterates what we just said about Reuven. Okay? How he squandered the Bechorah, he squandered the Kehuna, he squandered the Malchus. It should all have been his. And one by one, he squandered it with his impetuous behavior. Right? But he always has good intentions. But his intentions just never
work out.
He doesn't bring Yosef home. He doesn't save the day. He doesn't convince his father. He's not... Every time he appears... Now, I regret that I don't have much time to fortify this. Why is he with Korach? What's he doing with Korach? So the Rashi says, is it Gemara at the end of Sukkah? Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shechina. Woe to the Rasha, woe to the. If you look at it like an infield, right? Done with two tribes as catcher. First base is Reuven with two tribes. Second base is Yehuda leading the pack with two tribes. Third base is Ephraim with two tribes. And the three families of Levim were on first base, second base, and third base, and the Kohanim together with the Aron and pitcher's mound. So first base was Kehas. So Kehas, Korach is Kehas had
four sons,
Amram, Chevron, Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, and Elitzaphan. So when Elitzaphan ben Uziel was chosen to head the Kehas clan, Korach says, you know, I keep getting being pushed over. Okay. It's one thing Amram is the Bechor, so he gets a Moshe Aaron. But now Yitzhar is the next child. I should be getting in there, right? It's a Bechor thing. That's really what it is. It's that Reuven is perfectly set for Korach and his gripe. Right, that you can say Korach's gripe is against the whole Bnei Amram situation, or it's against what seems to be an arbitrary determination of merit. Why should the Bechor be taken from the Bechor from every family? The Kahuna should be in the hands of. So Moshe tells him in the Medrash, listen, this is not going to end well for you, Korach. You remember what happened to Nadav and Avihu. You know, being a Kohen is a serious issue. You know, I'm telling you now, it's not for Levium. You know, Rav Lochem B'nei Levi, Hashem gave you plenty, and I'll explain it all to you. And Korach doesn't back down. Moshe tries to make it abundantly clear that what happened to Dasan Avirim is about to happen to you. Right? So, on Friday night, I quoted my son-in-law's little shout out to Yoni Zolti, who came up where we were learning at the house. We learned, you know, Chumash Rashi. So he said, you know, a lot of these things that we're reading here about Kain and Hevel, I feel is true about Korach. And he pointed a number of linguistic connections, and the Os, but also that the earth opens up, Patsasas Piha, to swallow the people, and here to open up to take in Kevel's blood. But most important is that the takeaway is that in both stories, there's someone with a grievance.
And he's right? Oldest.
And with like a Bechorah kind of grievance for something that looks arbitrary. God, I came up with this first. I did keep doing this first. The Bechor is the Bechoro Tzono Mechel Behen, you know, is that, so Hashem tells him, Hevel is behaving like the Bechor, you're not. Right, so I'll give you a chance to fix things. But I'm not going to give you a free ride. Hashem could just give Hevel, Cain, whatever he gave Hevel, and Shoin. Cain wouldn't kill his brother the next day. Instead, Hashem says, listen, this is a meritocracy here. I know, God brings in the competitive spirit here. What? All right, I'm helping you here, Cain. All right, just like Moshe is helping Korach not to make a bad decision by telling him all that is available for the Bnei Levi.
And there's a whole sefer after that with the Bechor. Does it always get to be the leader?
Right, there you go. Right, so, And what's happening with Korach is that he does not back off. Cain and Korach both don't back off. They continue. Cain doesn't say, I don't know what I did to my brother. I don't know. I asked him what he did to get your favor, and he wouldn't answer me. That's why the pasuk doesn't say what they talked about, right? Takeaway though, and as I mentioned Friday night, if you were in shul, is that there is a grievance. Even if you don't go along with the grievance, I'm not saying we have to give full credence to every grievance, but we do have to understand this person feels grief. So I think in the case of Moshe, he does deal with it. He tries to tell them, Rav Lachem B'nei Levi. And what happens, you know, that I would say that the story of Korach is like the story of Migdal Bavel. Megoras Rasha Hitavosa. What the Rasha is afraid of, his actions will make it happen more surely and more readily. Right after the Korach's revolt, what does the Torah have in Parshas Korach? Perikid Zayin, Perikid Ches. It's all the 24 gifts of the Kehuna. You were supposed to get some of those. Right, and say for Ezra, the Levium didn't show up. Why do we have so many? You know, the 22,300 Levium,
there's supposed to be more Levium,
three Kohanim. How did it switch by the time of Ezra? All right, I understand the Kohanim are more careful with their lineage, but in the time of Ezra, it says there are thousands of Kohanim and have precious few Levium.
Because of the sin,
right? So it's, you know, so that you Goros Rashi Itavosa. You know, it turned things around like that. So Rav Elazar ben Azariah says Ezra made a takana that the Maaser Rishon should go to Kohanim now, not Levium anymore. All right. Okay, so Reuven is a tragic figure, but I conclude by saying, you know, he meant well. He had his mother's tova el bonar shel ima, the Maran Satan Shabbos says. He was tovea his mother's
kavod.
So therefore, Chazal say, Reuven zechur latov. He's okay. Chori Yisrael, you know, Veishma Yaakov Yisrael, Bnei Yaakov Shnei Masar. He's there and he's sitting together with them. Okay, so ends our discussion. Reuven. Next time, this is once a month, not once a year. Next time will be Shimon and Levi.